Okay. All right. All right. We're good.
Yo. What's up?
Man.
The show.
Man, it is much earlier in the day than we're used to.
I haven't even finished my coffee yet.
Yeah. I try to do the morning
routine. What time is it?
Routine. Was it 11 or 11:30 mostly?
Yeah. No. I mean, I usually get up earlier during the week, but my wife lets me sleep in on the weekend. And, 11:20 here, 10:20 right? Tony is.
Yeah, it's about to be 10:30.
Yeah, so. Well, we do that late night stream every night, so we always end up talking about something dumb and then staying on too late.
Oh man, yeah, like I
remember when I used to do that first internet radio show. Sometimes we'd stay on for 5 hours.
Man. That's what we were. Yeah, that's where we're at. We've been on for like 5 hours, but yeah, just we haven't even introduced you yet, man. Well, so. You want to welcome you to the show, Mr. Ed Opperman. And I know Matt has a lot of stuff he wants to get into as far as like deep state stuff. I mean, I have some things I want to go into. I was just listening to a couple of your episodes dealing with the MK Ultra stuff, the interview you did with Tom O'Neill. Man, that really threw me down that Manson rabbit hole all over again.
Let's go. I mean, can we introduce them? This is you qualify as a legendary in certain circles.
In my own mind.
Yeah.
In my own ego.
Well, I mean, these days, to have as big of a platform you have to cover the kind of stuff that you have, that's pretty impressive, right? You know, not too many people are touching this kind of stuff. They don't want to cover the same, you know.
You think so, man? I think like everybody's doing it now. You know,
like seems that like you have more of the sort of the remaining kind of like legacy format, right? Like being on the radio like that.
Yeah. Think,
and you get like the people on the book tours and all that. Think that you know, there's a lot of podcasts and all, but like we've been looking into it. There's not a lot of people who go in the weeds with some of the stuff, some of the more eccentric stuff.
I mean that's harder to find.
I mean, we're trying to carve out that lane, you know. TruAnon has their shtick, I guess I'd call it, right? And they're really good at what they do. I mean, we're
I was on there last night.
Yeah, no, you kind of hinted at it. Those guys are impressive. Do a lot of research. But yeah, it's interesting times, right? would you give us like your backstory, how you got into this,
into the radio stuff?
Yeah, into your field, like your investigatory efforts, research.
Oh boy, well,
I'm sorry, it's kind of an open-ended question, really.
No, that's okay. You know, I started out as an activist, you know, in New York City. With the Yippies and Lower East Side politics and stuff like that. And I just was exposed because, you know, the Yippies and there also their activities of marijuana, you know, advocacy and stuff like that, High Times Magazine, things like that. You know, we got used to a lot of counter surveillance and a lot of skullduggery and informants and COINTELPRO type people. You know, it was really in the mix. It's been the 70s, you know. So I was savvy enough in that area. I was working with them, you know, working the door and stuff. But I guess my first entry into real PI work was I had this source in the phone company that if I gave them an unlisted phone number, they could come back with a name and address, a social security number, a place of employment, and a list of all their long distance phone calls. That was worth a lot of money. I was able to market myself around to all different private investigators and bail bondsmen and lawyers and stuff like that at a very young age.
You're talking about in the 70s?
That was my entree into this kind of stuff as far as PI work.
You're talking about in the 70s now, right?
I can't hear the co-host at all.
Oh.
He says that was in the 70s?
Yeah. I'm 59 years old. So that was like around 1976 when I first connected with the Yippies.
You look young. I mean, I always say that would be one of my favorite eras in history to visit, like the, you know, mid to late 70s New York, like punk scene.
Well, we were right around the corner from CBGB's.
Yeah. Oh, man. You ever run into those guys?
Well, yeah, you know, sure. Because we had our own club over there. Studio 10 was called the Tom Fassad Multimedia Center. It was a little nightclub. Then we had Yippie headquarters across the street at 9 Bleecker Street.
It seems like it was like the right mix of like lawlessness without being, you know, because it's, you know, nowadays it's, there's nothing like that in Manhattan, at least. And, you know, the neighborhoods they have, they get gentrified very quickly.
You go down Bleecker Street now, they got like, the stores that buy clothes and stuff like that. You know?
Yeah, right.
I can't even think of the names, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
All right, Ed, can you hear me now, right?
Yeah, I hear you now.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, I went to Fordham for undergrad. I'm originally from Philly, but I lived in New York for a while. But I lived in Williamsburg right in the early 2000s. And, you know, when you go back there now, it's a completely different neighborhood, right? It's all, you know, like basically like a giant mall.
Yeah.
All the condo buildings and all. You used to have cool off buildings with, you know, artists could afford to live there. All right, so this was in the 70s. Sorry, I got sidetracked with the Lower East Side discussion. You were kind of the, like, I thought of, like, you were listening to the episode last night. You had a story about, like, moving weight with some groups that kind of, like, another way you got involved with that, just sort of being the point man with the,
That's how I met the Yippies. Yeah, right. Counterintelligence. Yeah, that's how I met the Yippies. Okay. And then, like, guys like A.J. Weberman, who I was talking about last night, that we would get our hash. And I was telling Chuna on that last night. A.J. was also, like, the head of the Jewish Defense Organization, too, as well. So it was, like, a lot of crossover between the different activist groups. And Al Sharpton was around, you know, with the National Action Network and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, it was just this mix of activists and people, concerned about surveillance. And counter surveillance, and, you know, of course, the smuggling and all that kind of stuff went along with it, because the Yippies were moving multi tons. They were running huge amounts of marijuana and hash. And if you ever listen to the hippie mafia about the, I forget his name, Richard Strand, yeah, who we used to sell to AJ, then AJ would sell to Fred, and Fred would sell to me.
I think my father-in-law was in that mix somewhere in Chicago. He had a couple. He was like a safe house or whatever. They had a, you know, stable house back then. 70s Chicago was not, housing market was all messed up. People would come out from New York and stay there on their way out to California and stuff. You know, drops off there. Was this like, just somebody at the phone company. Was this the, like, the early hackers, like the, you know, the freakers, anything like that? Yeah. Is that?
Really? I mean,
in touch with that. I forget his name right now, but I'm in touch with that guy, Captain Crunch. I forget his name, but he lived with AJ. He lived upstairs with AJ up there. So it was all the same bunch, basically, you know?
Oh, man.
What was his name? John. He moved to Vegas. I forget his name right now, but he moved to Vegas when I was in Vegas, and he had some kind of problem with his back or something like that, and he wanted me to help him stretch. He wanted me to help him move and stuff like that. I wanted to book him on the show a couple of times, but he would just talk and ramble on and on and on. So I forget his name though.
You're pretty good at keeping the, the more like keeping the crank shit at bay. I feel like, you know, keeping them on track. I heard you with who was it? When was it? Was it Valentine? Not Valentine. Episode you had last week about TWA. Not that guy. There's just so much content, right? Like you. Are kind of, I don't want to say all over the place, but you dig into all this stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's just like a wide swath of different topics that you, I mean, that I know that you're really into all of this stuff, Matt, like a lot more than I am, but I mean, you've like, especially lately, like you've been introducing me to all this different kind of content, and then, I mean, Ed just covers so much of this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'll cover anything that interests me. You know, if I find it interesting, then I can ask questions. I'll have something to ask about. Like, people are asking me to do these shows right now about COVID and quarantine and doctors and stuff.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know what to ask. I wouldn't, you know, what am I going to ask?
Well, I'm telling you, like, before, well, I don't think you probably couldn't hear me at the time, but, like, yeah, I just listened to your episode that you did the interview with Tom O'Neill over the Manson stuff and the MK Ultra theories behind that. And, man, you sent me all the way down that Manson rabbit hole all over again, man.
Which guest was that?
Tom O'Neill.
Tom O'Neill, is he the guy that we were talking about, the horse and carriage in Manhattan?
Yeah, I think for a little bit you were talking about that, yeah.
Right, now how funny is that? Here, I got this guy on the show. I happen to own one of those horse and carriages. And we knew the same guy, Randy Grill, and stuff.
Yeah.
It's a small world, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
The Daniel Hopsicker, the interview with the Dominion.
Yeah.
It seems like you're pretty good at, like, marshalling them, right? Your guests.
Let me tell you something. I really like Daniel, you know, and I always used to say the first time I interviewed Daniel, because he did all this great work on the flight schools and Muhammad Atta, and he found Muhammad Atta's stripper girlfriend.
Boom.
And he lived with Barry Seal's widow. He went there and embedded himself with Barry Seal's family. Great work. And this guy, that was the first radio show he ever did in his whole life. And he says, you know what? These people invite me on their shows and they're talking about storable food and the end of the world and stuff. You know? So,
yeah, it seems like, I mean, at least even, you know, 10 years ago, there was not the kind of the conspiracy like realms on the, you know, the internet and all that was a lot less, you know, partisan now, right? It's so like the sort of like the right wing conspiracy stuff is kind of all over the place. And incredibly connected to it's all sort of backstopping the mainstream Republican stuff, right? Like, it's all sort of in service of that. Really kind of annoying.
It's interesting because, you know, because in the old days it was the left, it was, you know, it was in Dick Gregory, you know, and these guys, everyone with JFK was all on the left, you know, and the Yippies, you know, Yips and Times and Overthrow Magazine was all on the left. The same kind of theories and conspiracy theories and stuff like that. AJ wrote the book Coup d'etat in America, which was the first book ever to place the Watergate burglars at the scene of the JFK assassination.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, man. I grew up with this guy.
That's insane.
I was a kid when I met him. And they said, look at his book. And, you know, it was then also he added to an Ipswich Times and the Yippie magazine. And he used to hang out with John Lennon and Yoko Ono in the Dakota at their house. And fascinating guy, AJ Webman.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of insane to go ahead and connect this John Lennon assassination, the JFK assassination, and then all the way to the Watergate burglaries. And I know Howard Hunt was a spook for years beforehand, even going back to, you're talking like a Bay of Pigs, and then later being implicated in part of the whole Watergate infrastructure.
Well, so is his wife, you know, Dorothy. She was a CIA as well. You know, I've been friends with his son, St. John Hunt, who been on the show about six or seven times, who now writes for Roger Stone, by the way. His son works for Roger Stone. And his godfather is, I'm not going to remember. It's that guy had the real, he's a right-wing guy. I'm not going to remember. But anyway, and St. John Hunt's mother, Dorothy Hunt, was killed in a plane crash when she was doing a bag of money drop for the Watergate burglars. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I saw somebody tweet about that yesterday. So I'm guessing it wasn't always like that, right? It was sort of more of a less partisan investigatory scene, right? Like people who are into kind of lifting the veil, I guess.
Well, you know, right. Well, radio, AM radio. Is controlled by the left right wing. Okay, they just control it. You know, they own the stations, they own the sponsors. It's really really hard to be a leftist in AM radio, except for like WBAI, you know, in New York City and something like that. You know, Art Bell was a serious right wing guy. He was doing all the kind of conspiracy stuff. So from my perspective, and obviously Alex Jones. You know, I think it's always been right wing as far as those guys go.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
Was this a was it more of a gradual thing? Because it kind of seemed like the whole conspiracy aspects of analyzing the how the government functions was more tied to the counterculture, the whole anti-establishment hippie era, and then like over time it just became more of this thing that was associated. I mean, just now, like how you said, the right wing controls all of AM radio.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, did you notice that just happening gradually over time, or is it like a concerted effort in order to control some sort of narrative? Or I mean, from your perspective, what do you think it was?
Well, yeah, I grew up on AM radio, you know, mm-hmm. back in New York, and we did have some left stations, mm-hmm. progressive liberal, which we'd call WBLS and WLIB and then WBAI. But then you had WOR with Barry Farber, who was a right-wing nut, and they had Bob Grant, who was a right-wing nut. But it all changed when Rush Limbaugh came along. And he turned the word liberal, bleeding heart liberal. He turned liberal into an insult.
Yeah.
And that's when everything changed. And mm-hmm. He just skyrocketed. And then you had guys like Savage come along and stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. By the way, you know, Michael Savage kind of just created his own audience. He spends hundreds of thousands of dollars a year on the marketing to, count his numbers of how many people are listening and then to sell it, you know. To get sponsors and stuff like that. It's like, mm-hmm. yeah.
When did you start hosting the show?
I started, it's been about 8 years in September, 8 years ago in September. What happened was, I pretty much kept a low profile for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I guess it was like the Tiger Woods case was the thing that I started getting interviewed about, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the Sarah Palin thing, you know, and then I wrote a book, you know, and I says, you know what, I says, I'm interviewed all the time. This is so easy. Let me write a book mm-hmm. and then let me get a little radio show and I'll just go in here and I'll just talk for an hour. I'll make jokes and stuff like that. It'll be fun. So I had a 1 hour show on this crazy internet station called Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com on Thursday morning. And the first show I did was about the West Memphis 3. And I think we broke all the servers over there, you know, because they the chat room was full of fanatical people, you know, and the phones were ringing off the hook. And it was the worst audio we had because we actually were running off this woman's cell phone. She would pretend that she had a computer to do the Skype connection.
But
she
doing
it on her phone. So they moved me from there to Saturday nights Friday nights. And then from there, we just took off and started picking up more stations.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I know this story, the West Memphis 3. Let's see.
Well, it's this fascinating story. These three young men in Arkansas killed these little boys, and they did an HBO documentary about it called Paradise Lost, where they says, well, maybe they weren't guilty, maybe they were satanic panic, and it was a big frame-up. And so this caused a big controversy. And I first contacted them because I thought they were innocent. Mm-hmm. And I offered to get them on Art Bell. But then after meeting the people in charge of the whole West Memphis 3, the awareness group, I saw that they were all just full of shit. And most of these people know these guys are guilty.
Okay. Yeah. That satanic panic stuff is interesting because I feel like that's kind of what the QAnon stuff is, right? You think it's does that kind of remind you of it a little bit? Like,
well, okay, you got to remember, okay? I lived through all that satanic panic stuff, okay, when it was really going on, you know? And let's take the McMartin preschool case, right? I was, when that was going on, I used to post and discuss it on Usenet.
Okay.
Remember Usenet? Yeah, okay. Yeah. Right. That's how old I am. But more recently, you know, and the whole thing was about how these kids, they were taken down into tunnels and stuff like that. And they said, well, this is so crazy. This is ridiculous. Yeah. But if you really look into the case, all these kids had the same sexually transmitted diseases, okay, that kid William Buckey had. And years later, I interviewed exclusively. There was a man that was taken down there. He was a geologist, and he had ground-penetrating radar. And he went there looking for the tunnels, and he couldn't find any tunnels. But the day after the trial, after the trial, the family had given over their property to their attorneys to pay off their legal fees. It turned over the deed, and they were raising down the properties. And this guest, Mr. Michaels, Bruce Michaels, geologist, discovered a hand-dug room underneath the detached garage and a hand-dug staircase underneath the detached garage.
Wow.
So, yeah, first-hand witness. And then it came out – this came out in my interview about 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. Then it came out – they just did a document dump where the FBI has a drawing of it with an arrow to the garage entrance to the tunnel.
Wow. You know?
Yeah.
So it was real then.
Wow.
So,
right. And
I thought it was hook'em. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I got to tell you, you talk about QAnon too, okay? No, I'm not QAnon. This, I mean, what was that thing? Pizzagate, right?
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
Okay. Now, I've talked to people who work there, okay, that I've interviewed all the other that were threatened by Alifantis, okay, in real life. People, you know, who told me real life stories that went on there. Now, when you start getting into this, all this hysteria that goes on, you know, I think a lot of that is purposeful disinformation that's injected into these stories, and I've seen this pattern over the years with there's a lot of it with the West Memphis 3 case. These online debates that just go on for years, where people seem to be on professional trolling.
Yeah,
yeah. So did McMartin, and so with the Pizzagate just took off.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Something that we've been talking about recently too is it. In some ways, it seems like they're less effective at kind of controlling the narratives now. I guess with the internet and all, it's harder to, you know, have a, like in a, you know, I guess back when you were coming up, there was so few like media outlets, right? So it was kind of a lot easier to like manufacture consent and kind of have the official story. And then anybody who disagreed was, you know,
was kind of looked at as a crank.
Yeah. It seems like now though, I mean, some of the stuff, you know, they obviously have, you know, the QAnon stuff seems like they have kind of like, you know, partisan goals, right? They're, that seems to be more of like a, you know, like a right wing, you know, operation. But then in terms of like, you know, like the COINTELPRO stuff, like tamping down like left wing thought, like it doesn't seem like they're doing as good a job with that now, right? Have you, I mean, am I just being naive? No.
That's a good question, you know, because I don't know, man. Like in the old days, there was a lot of personal firsthand infiltration, you know, face-to-face agents,
right.
You know. Like I'll tell you a story, like one time with this guy who was at the head of the Rainbow family, and he had a dispute with one of the yippies. And they said, well, what do you expect? He's KGB. And I says, what is KGB? What are you talking about? Yeah, this guy gets paid by the KGB.
Really?
So I go and talk to the guy right later on. And I says, hey, man, because I was they were having a beef and I'm trying to put a squash to the beef.
Mm-hmm.
I bought some scrap wood. The guy stole some wood. I go to war on this wood. He's got two knives and a can of mace to go after each other. And I says, hey, man, you know, but what's this thing about the KGB? They tell me. And he goes, oh, I get paid by the Soviet consulate for my poetry.
What?
He said he gets paid for his poetry. From the Soviet. He said, I get a stipend from the Soviet consulate.
For his poetry.
For my poetry. This guy couldn't write any poems, man. He couldn't read or write. I don't know if he could read.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of that, you know. There was a lot, too, of people, you know, who would, like guys who worked for High Times Magazine, they would catch a case and then you just couldn't trust them anymore, you know. And even like Abby Hoffman had a case his whole life, you know. Timothy Leary had a case. The whole time that Timothy Leary was out there in the public eye, he was out on bail for a marijuana charge.
Wow.
Yeah. Huh. So there was a lot of that going on back then, a lot of informants.
Well, it seemed like after the FBI started using things like RICO or federal minimums, that they were able to go ahead and flip a lot of people. Like a lot of people think about it limited to like the mob infiltration, but I would think that was a mechanism that they used to also infiltrate these leftist groups like you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Because even the hippies had a big case with hundreds of pounds of marijuana. And no one goes to jail for it. You know, can't point fingers because that's worse sometimes, you know, worse than having suspicions, you know, suspicions. But you got to be careful who you deal with. And I think now they've data mined us so much that they know every thought in our head before we even think it. And it's just so easy for them to manipulate that. Dude, talk about COINTEL manipulation.
Yeah.
The kind of thing they could do now, you know, is just mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't want you to speculate too much, or maybe I do, but what do you think they're doing? You know, it seems like they have people, it seems like they have like an activist basis. Like I was listening to your episode about the Vegas protest.
Yeah.
It seems like stuff like that's going on, and they're more sort of concerned with like wrecking things, like keeping, you know, keeping these groups from growing too much, like these like activist groups, and getting them to fight each other and make them look bad and that sort of thing. And then they have, you know, the online stuff. I feel like they have a lot of, you know, like bots and sock puppet accounts and all that they use for that sort of, you know, get on the same narrative. And they also seem to have, they have people who voluntarily sign up to defend sort of the establishment now, right? They'll just are tricked into thinking this cable news version of reality, and they sort of go with it.
There's a, I mean, if you spend any amount of time on the internet, you see a lot of that when you talk about like indoctrination. You know, it's not even so much about having to go ahead and pay somebody off. They're just straight up sucked into the whatever narrative that they're trying to push out.
Yeah, true believers.
Maybe yeah, exactly.
But when you guys got like people like Project Veritas, and people have tracked out down their funding, they get huge funding from like the Mercers and stuff like that, and from Cambridge Analytica funds these guys.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It seems like the right's got well-funded backers to push their sort of, you know, their you know, conspiracies and their sort of like countercultural ideas, and then the left is sort of, you know, scrambling on their own. I don't know, you know, talk about like Soros, but I don't know, it's not. I've never been involved in any activism that had any kind of financial support, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Well, I mean, just the point of reference, it just seems like the interest of the left is not does not run in conjunction with a lot of those money interests.
But the thing is, you know, I've also talked, if you ever listened to the show we did about the Bundy Ranch people and the Millers, you know, if you ever heard that stuff, that was a total, the Millers were this couple who traveled cross country to get involved in a campaign in for sheriff and a governor in Nevada by that Jesse Ventura party that was in Nevada there. And they wound up down there at Bundy Ranch. And they were the ones who claimed, they were the first people who came up with this story, that there was going to be a drone attack. And they were there when the 3%ers and the Patriot, you know, these guys pulling guns on each other, a standoff, you know. And they're involved in all this stuff. Then out of the blue, right, they get kicked out of a Bundy Ranch. They leave their motel, go 3 miles down, push in a shopping cart, and ambush two cops in a CC's Pizza and shoot them down dead. Okay, we go looking into that background. These two were at the Million Mask March. They were at Occupy Wall Street, and now suddenly they're down here at this right-wing militia thing. Down here. It was the whole thing stunk to high heaven. Okay, we found out they're informants too on their neighbors down there at the motel. Mm-hmm. Story's not reported anywhere but on my show. I tried to get it on several stations. They wouldn't even let me talk about it.
Yeah.
It's totally. And then when you go look into the guys from Trevor Aronson, who works for Intercept, and did that whole investigation into the people down at Bundy Ranch and how the FBI went in there with a film crew and interviewing people, and they were all informants. They're on both sides. They're all mixed up. You know
how?
Like, yeah.
You know, it's like that that militia case, right? That kidnapping case from a few months ago. There was 13 people in the operation, and two of them were informants, at least that we know of. yeah, they're all over the place. I mean, we're trying to be aware of that, but it's so hard too to like kind of to get people to think that way, right? That these people on the internet aren't your friend. You know, you can't trust anyone.
Especially when you see somebody come out of nowhere and they got 100,000 followers a week later, you know?
Yeah. It most of the time when you do see something like that, and then what happens when you have when you see an account appear like that with that amount of followers, suddenly they have this massive influence in whatever kind of political circle that you're in, and you have everybody kind of reciting those same things that or whatever comes out from that account. It just gets disseminated on down so quickly. Too.
Hey, look, I don't know if you guys, how much you know about me, but I was talking about Jeffrey Epstein back in 2013. Mm-hmm. I couldn't, my first show, I couldn't find a guest because no one even knew what the guy's name was, okay? Then I'm actually working on a case. I got hired on the lawsuit against Trump and Epstein in 2016. Okay, before you still were allowed to talk about it. Mm-hmm. Then Julie Brown does one freaking story, and it's everything. The floodgates released, and now everybody's a freaking expert. And these guys got a half million followers on all their channels and stuff, you know. They have no involvement.
Yeah, I mean, that Epstein thing, it was really eye-opening because, you know, the first thing I saw about it was when, I think it was on ABC, that one of the producers or something got fired just for even trying to bring it up. And it just seemed like this reoccurring thing that it was just a constant effort to stop people from going ahead and talking about Epstein in any kind of way, even though there was all this stuff linked to him for as long as there was.
Well, you know, that woman you're talking about who talks about having her story killed, mm-hmm. that story was killed by Dershowitz. He admits it.
Really? Well, wow.
Yeah.
Where do I want to go with this?
We've talked a little bit about Epstein and the whole and the murder and everything. I mean, now, I mean, is it kind of solidified that it was a murder? But.
Well, I've always thought that he was walked out of there, you know. AJ spent time in that prison, mm-hmm. and so did Hoffenberg, who was Epstein's former partner. Mm-hmm. We know there's contraband in his cell because we saw it with our own eyes, even after the death. but I think that it would be, and plus the whole thing, Epstein didn't kill himself. That's not a generic, you know, a meme that just took off by itself. That was controlled too. There's so much. Spooks around this whole Epstein thing that goes back to the grandparents in this case.
Wow.
You know, so we'll never get to the bottom of any of this. There's so much confusion, misinformation, you know, it's just beyond.
One of the problems is no matter how much sort of like evidence of foul play and misdirection you find, it still doesn't change sort of like the popular narratives, right? Mm-hmm. Like you still have people, you know, no matter how much proof you show them, you still have people denying that anything is different than the official story, right?
Yeah, very often you'll see there'll be like a TV movie of the week they'll do about the official story, you know? And then that's what people remember.
The TV movies.
It's so true. And that movie they made about McMartin Preschool would star James Woods and was directed produced by Oliver Stone's company. Okay? It was a big whitewash on the whole McMartin Preschool case that had people, but oh my God, so much happened in that case. The district attorney in the case quit the case in the middle of the case and went to work for the defense. Okay. Okay. And then the people who were working as defense investigators became producers of the movie, the whitewash of the movie at the end. It's unbelievable, man. Yeah.
And
I'm trying to be like cognizant of this stuff now, right? To see it coming. It's still, like I said, it's still tough. Wondering, like, have you had any other, any other new information come out about that story you told about Vegas? I don't know if you could give us that story and kind of go into any more details you might have that weren't on that episode. That's just really fascinating.
Oh, which one? The one with the protest where MoveOn.org came in and took over?
The AstroTurf protest.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing we have to be cognizant of now. And I feel like people aren't, right? And even if they are, you still have a faction who'll deny it, right? That's kind of the problem I see is getting the activist on the same page, right? Like, because I think, you know, things are getting worse, right? Like opportunities are getting worse for people. There's the wages have been stagnant and the cops are out of control in a lot of places and not looking good for our generation, right? And trying to get people organized, get people on the same page. And it's tough with stuff like that, right? Maybe not as explicitly, you know, I don't know if there's like a modern COINTELPRO, but something like that. But
even worse though, it's even worse than a modern COINTELPRO because I'm sure we know the FBI is still doing this kind of stuff, but now we have like the Democratic Party doing it, you know?
Yeah.
And they go looking for these kids in high school and they pluck them out of high school. They watch the kids that are in speech and debate and stuff like that. And we're going to get this kid into our, you know, and volunteering for these candidates and stuff. And they get sucked into the system and they got the DNC is so corrupt. They got, you know, you go to voting to vote. They got their people, their volunteers, and they're running the polls. You know, it's just so rigged. They're so entrenched, thinking years and years ahead of us, you know. And we really got to stop thinking, hey, what are we going to do this weekend? And start looking 20, 30 years ahead, all right? Because things are only getting worse. You talked about how cool it was back in the 70s, back in New York. It was. You know, you couldn't smoke pot. You could get your ass kicked by the cops if you did. And it was very racist. There's a lot of racism. You couldn't, if you were a man, you couldn't wear a dress. You would have got your ass kicked. You would have got arrested for that, thrown out of a mental institution, okay? Mm-hmm. Now you can do all these things. And a lot of stuff you can do. But they've got the technology. They've got the economic. We're just living, man. We're working just like slaves, man, at this age. Okay, where back then, one person could run the household, work as a butcher, and have a wife and three kids, and one income family. And now it's beyond your imagination.
Oh yeah,
you know. So yeah, time's running out, man. You know, I was very encouraged. I was encouraged by the whole Bernie Sanders thing. And at least we're saying the right words. People weren't afraid of socialism. We can organize these kids. And a lot of ways we have, okay? Like right now, Nina Turner just announced she's running.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We talked about that. I mean, I kind of put that in the category of a game changer if she gets up into Congress. I mean, just
those are my people, okay? Mm-hmm. The people running her campaign, Amy Vallela. Go look for the first interview with Amy Vallela. I did it. Mm-hmm. My daughter interned for Amy Vallela. Mm-hmm. The other campaign guy, that Kenan Corth, man, he's my guy. The only interview you ever find with him is on my show. These are our people. So, you know, you can do this stuff. You know, you can bring on, you can look ahead. I always, you see a lot of my shows too, I would bring on young activists who would never gave an interview before. Mm-hmm. And I'd bring them up, give them some practice. You know, give them 20 minutes on the show. There's no reason not to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I was encouraged when I saw Bernie. He was saying the right stuff, you know, although we got to totally overhaul everything. Yeah. And I was encouraged with Black Lives Matter, you know, but it just seems and it had popular support. It had the soccer moms, you know, but it just seems like that got hijacked, you know, and it no longer has the favor of the soccer moms anymore like it once had. I guess because they portrayed it so much as riots and riots work.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I've been saying. We've been defending riots the whole time. That's the only kind of thing that's going to work, right? They don't. You have these, you know, kind of the more co-opted faction wants to do these like parades with police escorts and all.
Yeah, you know, and what you bring up, Ed, about the whole co-opting the different messaging, even the tactics. I mean, when you get to a point where you see Nancy Pelosi taking a knee, you know, and it's one or the other where they go ahead and they try to demonize something into the ground, or they just try to co-op it and make it their own thing.
Yeah,
and they've got think tanks, they've got market research, you know, the fundraising, they got the fundraising all you know. All we can do is just capture a little bit of ground on the street and keep them out of there as much as we can. one block at a time. Otherwise, I see. Well,
And then, I mean, like how you're talking about in regards to Bernie. I mean, I still kind of feel, even though you know he didn't get either nomination in 2020 or 2016, that it is still kind of a win for all the people that kind of followed his line of politics and entered into the fold after his candidacy in 2016. So you talk about after 2016, how you had the whole wave of progressives, even groups like Our Revolution, Justice Democrats, to a lesser extent now. But I guess based on what you're telling me a little bit, I'm kind of suspicious about it being like a controlled opposition.
Well, let's not forget, Bernie is a capitalist, okay? He does not advocate for the nationalization of one industry out there, okay? If we were to nationalize the oil industry alone, like every 85% of the world is a nationalized oil industry. There's a handful of countries like Russia and China where they allow these criminals to take a natural resource from under your feet and under my feet and sell it back to us.
Right.
Okay? Like a bunch of idiots that we are. Mm-hmm. And if we could just capture something like that, a state bank or, you know, a public bank, these minor changes we could do that we would all benefit.
That's what we keep saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
the thing is, Bernie kind of took the word socialism and he turned it into welfareism, which free this, free that. In many ways, it's counterproductive. And if we just had some people out there really talking about nationalizing the oil industry, which is a no-brainer.
Yeah. It's just frustrating, right? Because this stuff is like glaring. to us who have kind of looked at it at all, right? It's like, no, we're totally being screwed. Like, you talk to, like, my parents' generation and, you know, your generation. I guess my mom's, I think, probably your age. They don't understand, right? You explain to them, you're like, look at the wages here versus what they were then. Like you were saying about having one salary, being able to afford, you know, your family's whole life with just one parent working 40 hours a week, you know, have pension, health care. People don't, you know, they have this Prop 22 in California now.
The doctor used to come visit your house, man.
Yeah.
The doctor would come to your house with a little bag and give you the medicine out of the little bag.
Yeah.
Right? You know?
What a life.
You got to take a loan. I got a busted, torn bicep right now. I can't get this thing fixed anywhere in the country.
Oh.
Okay. It's just impossible. But if you ask your mom, okay, you know, mom, it used to be so much better back then than it is now. The quality of life was so much better. And she'll say, oh, that's because of these people on welfare who take all the money. Yeah. And, give it away. And they beat us on that, man. That they took that narrative and they ran with it and they won.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. It's frustrating. I mean, I feel like I'm hopeful just when you see the younger generation is not so indoctrinated, right? But we've got to. An uphill battle, but that's why it's like I'm was worried about the other shoes going to drop all the time, right? Like it's not like they're not going to let this whole generation come up with, you know, talking about communism and all, right?
I mean, you'd think not, right? But I mean, that's kind of the direction that it just seems like the more access to information as far as the economic side of things, that's the way people end up gravitating towards. Because yeah, like it's what you always say, Matt, like the ideas on their face just sound better.
What ideas?
Like I'm talking about, like the lefty ideas.
Oh yeah, no, yeah. When you explain it to people, it's a no-brainer, right? Mm-hmm. It's just that it's so hard to dispute this sort of the official narrative, right? They come out and they say this, that, and the other thing, and you're, you know, like Steven Pinker out there telling everybody the world's great, you know, everything's fine, and you know, meanwhile, you have people being, you know, just completely blackballed on. You know, saying anything about Palestine or talking about any kind of like Bolivia, you bring this stuff up at all and you're just kind of ostracized from the mainstream. So I think in certain ways it's worse now, but in other ways it's better. Talk about like other countries too. It's, you say that to him, like, what do you think, why is it that every other country has these things that we can't have, right? Like every other country has basic necessities. Like the difference is here, we have this giant military and a bunch of billionaires. Like that's what we get for it, right? Like we're the most productive labor force in the world. And instead of having just a decent social safety net, we have, you know, like whatever, like techno-feudalism, right? Whatever they're trying to do.
You know, if you really thought about it though, you know, because the only reason our military is so, it's such a profitable business is because we pour so much tax money into it.
Uh-huh.
And because really it doesn't produce anything, right? It doesn't produce anything of any benefit. So what they've, the industry that they've decided to run the economy of this country off of is the industry of killing. Okay. Mm-hmm. They couldn't come up with a better plan, you know, or a better idea. Yeah. We could all be living so much better if we just cut out this business with the US military. It's really, because we have the biggest military on the whole planet.
Yeah, it just seems like we're not. They're running out of ways to tell us why we need that, right? I mean, or sure they'll find something, but you know, like when I was a kid, it was the Cold War was ending, and then it was, you know, the '90s. It was like the Eastern Europe stuff, like you know, Yugoslavia, Serbia, and then 9/11 happens.
Yeah,
right? And then
they've been beating up that dead horse for the last 20 years, trying to say that we need to stay in the Middle East and. We've been in a perpetual state of conflict since then.
Yeah, but now we have the pandemic, and they're going to come up with a way to tell us that if they can shoot the pandemic,
I really wouldn't put it past them. I mean, you're not wrong about that. You know, somehow or another, it's going to come back to we need more war to defeat. Yeah, even
they keep talking about China this, China that. We need to make China pay for it, and that's terrifying to me. Not because I think they're actually going to go to war with China, but they're going to use that as an excuse to. Sort of, you know, continue this just absurd military budget. We have them in Congress arguing to get people a basic, you know, $1,200 check, and Meanwhile, the military budget passes another $740 billion, right? Yeah. Like, that stat that always drives me nuts is just, you could fund free college for everybody just on like a, you know, a yearly increase on the military budget, right?
Yep.
Not even cutting it, just not raising it one year. You could afford to put everybody in free college.
Yeah, but if people went to college, they would know the definition of socialism.
Yeah.
And they would know that Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer were not socialists.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that Obamacare is not socialism. They wouldn't understand that if they went to college.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing how much the messaging doesn't even change depending on whatever policy. I mean, they came out and said the ACA is straight up socialism. And, yeah, you know, they'll say the same thing about Medicare for all, and then they'll go ahead and say they'll call Joe Biden a socialist as much as they'll call Bernie Sanders or AOC a socialist.
Yeah. It's
But I mean, it's kind of like what you mentioned about Rush Limbaugh, Ed, where they turn liberal into this swear word, and then it's and you transfer it over to socialism is just this, you know, you might as well call somebody Satan.
I had Alan Woods on the show who advised Chavez on socialism, you know?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And you know, he has socialism.com, I think is the website, or Marxism.com. Mm-hmm. And he comes on, and the first thing I said was, you know, here in America, you know, the word communist is an insult.
Yes, yes.
But you want to know what, too, man? So many people, I'm arguing with someone. I said, well, I had the guy on who advised them, Venezuela about socialism.
Yeah.
And they never listened to the show. Oh, yeah, that one, I didn't listen to that one. You know, you had a chance to learn, you know, you didn't do it.
Yeah, but that has to be several decades of messaging to turn communism into swear. But yeah, it's like you said, it's a swear word in the national lexicon or an insult. I mean, you see that. This is the first thing if you talk to right wingers on either Matt or my profile, the first thing they'll call you is a fucking commie.
Yeah. Those guys you expect it from, right? I get upset when you see people who are, you know, supposedly well-meaning liberals and they're kind of
right. The same exact thing.
Liberal anymore. They all love the CIA and the FBI. They all are pro-imperialism. Yeah. I mean, they think like we're being unreasonable for saying maybe we should have health care. You know, maybe
right.
We should, you know, like not be drowning in debt our whole lives. Because you're coming up and it's like, my whole life, it was like you got to get good grades, go to a good college, right? That sort of version of the American dream, whatever you would call it, I feel like that's kind of changing now too, right? Because I think they're starting to realize that there's not enough jobs for all these people, right? Like all these white collar jobs are just going overseas or being automated and turned into, you know, gig work or have, like gig jobs like Fiverr, people will come in and do like a single assignment. You do start to notice this kind of spreading of this, you know, anti higher education messaging, right?
Yeah.
Certainly on the right, but starting to see it other places too, where it's just, you know, go to trade school, you know, learn to code, whatever it is, not, you know, not study, get a good grades and go to good college. Cause it's absurd, the tuition now. Like I'm just thinking about, you know, my kids going to school in, you know, 10 years, and I'm like not having it, right? We're gonna have to figure this out because they're not gonna be able to afford it. That's changing, and it just seems so crystal clear that job opportunities are not as good as they were, but you know, that stuff is
well, especially post 2008, 2009, Matt, like you always say about how the economy was built on a recovery of turning everybody into a gig worker.
Yeah.
It's just to squeeze a few more, you know, a few more dollars out for the ruling class, right? It's it's dark, man. It's dark, and I don't see it coming around. Like, we have a couple things coming, you know, a couple of opportunities, but it just seems like, you know, they tighten their grip more and more every day. And you hear Joe Biden talking, you know, I don't know if you heard that leak call from him talking to those activists. It just doesn't bode well for the next 4 years, right? Like we're going to have this whole, this bulwark right? Defending capital, defending the status quo, and anybody that comes out, you know, talks about it, they have it now so that if you even talk about the working class, they call you a racist, or they call you a, you know, like bigoted towards whatever group, right? And it's, in some ways, I feel like that kind of like weaponization of that sort of language is kind of getting too ridiculous, you know, when they have like, oh, you're attacking Yura Tandon because she's a strong like woman of color, right? Like you're attacking Michelle Flournoy because, you know, you can't have a strong woman running the Pentagon. That kind of jumped the shark a little bit, I feel like, right, when they're doing that. But they're going to try to lean into that this whole time, right? Whenever you criticize any of these people in Joe Biden's cabinet, it's going to be because you have a problem with their identity, not that right. they're, you know, squeezing the working class and, you know, killing people abroad. So, I mean, I don't know, though. I feel like that indoctrination runs deep with the older crowd. Let's see. And then you have Trump talking about declassification. Do you think anything is going to come of that?
It's such a, that guy's such a monkey wrench, man. You never know what's going to come out of Trump, you know?
I definitely have noticed that it seems like, you know, like those UFO videos from a few years ago, right?
Right.
That's the kind of thing that nothing like that's ever happened in my life, right? And there's something fishy going on with that. I think it's probably more likely to be some sort of, you know, top secret military stuff, right? They got to be spending all that money on something, huh? Like,
right. It's like, you know, what was that line from Independence Day? You're like, you don't really think they spend $10,000 on a hammer, $30,000 on the toilet seat, do you?
I mean, I don't know. What do you have any thoughts on that?
I kind of think they do. I think Trump, you know, he's selling, you know, there's so much theft and graft and, you know, bribery going on in the military, contracting, you know, forget it. And disclosure, who knows, man, who knows? And again, it's one of those topics, too, where there's so much disinformation pumped in, you know, and these people are supposed to be experts on UFOs. You talk to them, they're just nuts. They're crazy.
You meet these
people, they're nuts.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the times, like, you know, initially when they talked about somebody like Bob Lazar, the skeptics about his story initially, that's what they said about him, was that he's some kind of government plant to distract from what they're really doing, as far as, you know, people get distracted by saying, oh, UFO. Alien stuff, and then they don't really go ahead and pay attention to say, oh, okay, black op by the government.
Well, I mean, I feel like we are due for some new declassification in terms of, like, the Air Force, right? Like, it's been, seems like it's about, we're about due for another sort of, like, them sort of admitting what they've been working on, right? Because it's been a while since we've had any new kind of top secret stuff from there, you know, from that, anything from DARPA or anyone like that come out.
Mm-hmm.
Those videos from a few years ago, there's something there, right? I don't know what it is. If it's a completely fake or what, like, I don't necessarily, you know, I don't think it's aliens flying around there, but there's something, there's new technology there that we don't know about. And I also feel like it's, like you said, it's a lot of, you know, disinformation purposely, right? I sort of noticed that there's been a lot of stories in the last few weeks, and I'm kind of wondering if it's connected to the election stuff, right? Like, they want people to stop talking about
this. Yeah. Election, right? Yeah. You know, that was a good point that you keep bringing up, Matt. You know, like, one thing that will get, like you said, right wingers distracted is talking about conspiracy stuff, UFO stuff. And right now, right. The entire discussion is about election fraud, Dominion voting, and mail-in ballots, and ballots in briefcases, ballots in bags, or getting trucked in the middle of the night. You know, and,
well, I don't know if you, last night I was listening to Fox News, and the whole thing was Hunter Biden's taxes.
Yeah.
And the Hunter Biden investigation. I heard the name Hunter Biden last night, like every 2 seconds. Man.
Yep.
So. Hey, by the way, did you guys hear my story? I guess about the whole thing about the DEA raid with the second laptop.
No, I didn't hear that part yet.
Oh,
okay. This is really good stuff, yeah. Man. Because what happened was,
there? I mean, you'll tell the story.
Okay. What happened was, do you know about the DEA raid on Dr. Keith Ablow's office where they got the other Hunter Biden laptop?
I only heard the one about the pawn shop, right? The
there
one
that. You go. Okay. All right. If you go to my Spreaker channel or to my Patreon, I have an interview, a raw interview there with the pawn shop, not the pawn shop, the computer repair guy. With like four.
That's it. That's what it was. Yeah.
His name is Isaac Mack. And there's like four reporters and they're grilling him, and he can't keep his story straight on what the mm-hmm. chain of custody was, how he came into possession of this laptop, when did he first give it to the FBI, when did he give it to Rudy Giuliani's people? It's all over the place. Mm-hmm. So what happened was I was involved in a lawsuit against Dr. Keith Ablow, who was a Fox News contributor mm-hmm. and a therapist, right? Mm-hmm. Because he was molesting this young woman, 19 years old, who had her in a sexual abusive relationship, S&M relationship, where he actually had her committed to a mental institution and then resumed the relationship. So anyway, real character.
Yeah.
So it turns out that Hunter Biden went to live with this guy for 3 months. Okay. What? Yep. Hunter Biden lived with Dr. Keith Ablow. When Keith Ablow during a period of time where he had lost his license, and he lost his license due to the lawsuit I was involved in. Just recently, so the people involved with my clients in that case sent me and says, hey, did you know this other laptop was at Keith Ablow's house? So I start looking into that, and I find out that there was a party, a book release party for Bradley Birkenfeld, who's the author of Lucifer's Banker. And he got a $100 million reward from the IRS for exposing Swiss banking account irregularities and corruption.
$100 million?
$100 million, yeah.
Whoa. They
dropped in this guy's lap. So he had a book release party. And who's there at the book release party? Bo Dietl, Bernie Kerik, John Kirkawa, and I think Rudy Giuliani was there too as well. And what comes up in a story, I think it was the Daily Beast, one of these places, there's a story about this. Mm-hmm. And it says they get wind that there's another laptop over at Keith Ablow's house. So Bo Dietl and Birkenfeld hop on a plane, go knock on Ablow's door and try and get this laptop from him. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't give it to them. And 2 days later, there's a raid by the DEA. And the DEA gets possession of this second laptop. But Hunter Biden's lawyers get the laptop back from him. So now, that's the public story. Let me tell you the real story.
Okay.
Because I had Birkenfeld on my show. As soon as I heard this whole story, I call up Birkenfeld and want to come on the show and tell me about your great book, Mr. Birkenfeld. Okay. But I've known Bo Dietl, too, from Manhattan back in New York. And I talked to Birkenfeld before the show, and he says, oh yeah, me and Bo, we don't went down to get the laptop and stuff like that. I said, okay, let's keep it fresh on the air. On the air, he tells me he's contacted by Keith Ablow's brother, that Keith Ablow has Hunter Biden's laptop and wants to monetize it. He wants to sell it for $2 million.
Wow.
Okay? Mm-hmm. Wow. So okay. Birkenfeld and Bo Dietl go down to negotiate a deal. I assuming they couldn't come up with a deal, okay? And we got to assume, too, if Keith Ablow wants $2 million for this laptop, he has to know there's something of value on that laptop that's worth at least $2 million because that's the price he placed on,
mm-hmm.
which is a lot for this kind of information. They couldn't come up with a deal. 2 days later, DEA raids the house and they get the laptop.
Damn.
Okay. Now, and then somehow the information from that laptop makes its way over to the computer repair guy. All right. Because when I asked Birkenfeld, and Birkenfeld says, yeah, there had to be that. That's where that information had to come from. It had to be that laptop, right? But what really, obviously, what clearly happened here is that Rudy Giuliani, Bo Dietl, got a hold of a judge, got a search yeah. warrant.
And they got the raid.
Raided, got the laptop, made copies. Okay, everybody's happy. Here's your copy back, Hunter Biden, but we got the copy. Because they're showing this copy for months, you know? What's his name? Bannon had the copy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And by the way, too, man, all the stuff that Birkenfeld says to me is totally 100% exclusive. He hasn't said it anywhere in public before. And oh, it's wow. in the Opperman Report Patreon. You can go there and get that. And so was the interview with the young lady who was the victim of Ablow with the lawsuit. I have a show with her there, Samantha Spiegel. And I have the raw audio from the four-man interview grilling the computer repair guy where he just falls apart.
Oof.
Oh, wow.
That's what I'm working on.
So that they have all this stuff, and they like the stuff they chose to release was just not
No,
it wasn't gonna move the needle.
No,
really
no. I mean, you had talked. You talked about it a lot, Matt. Where you? I mean, the stuff they released as far as like the with the
foot job.
Yeah, the foot job and all that kind of stuff. I mean, for a lot of people that saw it, like they just kind of ended up looking at them as, oh well, that, I mean, that makes them look cool.
Well, you know, it's interesting because both Bernie Kerik and Rudy Giuliani were saying, talking about we've seen on this computer images of a 14-year-old kid.
Oh.
So I tweeted to Bernie Kerik. I says, well, how many people have seen this? Because you're all circulating child pornography. If you're passing around his laptop with child porn on it, you're all circulating child porn. Yeah. Two days later, they dropped it off the Delaware Police Department. So I guess somebody came to their senses.
Well, yeah, then rather than just publicly release it all over the place,
I mean,
well, plus they hold, if they can hold it back, if they got Hunter Biden with a child, okay, which is the guy has no boundaries, okay,
yeah,
and it has no wisdom, no self control, doesn't make good decisions.
Mm-hmm.
The family obviously has some kind of interest in kids, you know, weird stuff going on there with Biden kissing his granddaughter.
Dude. The videos that go around of Biden. I mean, there was a whole thread on Twitter with him and like kids and stuff. And I mean, it's really eye opening. And I mean, that stuff. Just go ahead.
Explain to me, why didn't Trump make a commercial of that and play 24/7? That's what I assumed he was going to do. Creepy Joe.
Yeah. I mean, that was left more on Twitter circles and from everything that we see from Trump, it's not like anything like that is out of bounds, you know. And
exactly.
Yeah. So I mean, it does raise the question as to why he didn't want to go there. As far as
from my experience from working on campaigns and opposition research, I know that stuff comes up and the two campaigns negotiate and they make a deal. Says, okay, we're not going to talk about our affairs. We're not going to talk about our bankruptcies. You don't bring up mine. I don't bring up yours. And I know that goes on in state level politics. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure that's what went on in 2016 when we had a lawsuit against Trump and Epstein and no one talked about it.
Yeah. That's what I feel like. It's so much as they don't open the door to that because they don't want to.
Right. They're both.
Exactly. Like, that's what I felt like with the impeachment, right? They have this whole shit show about the Ukrainian, you know, it was a perfect call, folks. And then instead of having any kind of discussion of his dealings with the Saudis, what's going on with the Trump hotels
or the Turks,
any of that crap that he was doing pretty openly, instead they have it about this stupid phone call that, you know, kind of makes him look good, you know. It's really frustrating, right? That's what I mean. It's like the current Democratic Party, it's like I always say that they're bad, like, ideologically, policy wise, right? You know, neoliberalism. But they're also bad, like, tactically, right? They're bad. They aren't good at controlling the narrative or getting messaging out there. And it really does feel like they're, you know, the Washington generals a lot of times, right?
Yeah, right. I was going to say that because both sides are getting paid off by the same people, you know? And so there's a lot of, you know, Globetrotters, you know? By the way, right now they're saying that the Proud Boys leaders just got is meeting with the president. Got invited to the White House.
Whoa.
Okay.
That's like his last, you know, his last gasp, right? You think? I mean, I don't think he's going to do anything, but
they got a pretty big crowd in D.C. right now.
Yeah, those. That's what I'm saying. I think that they don't like that, right? They're trying to get those guys to shut up. I think that they're trying whatever they can do, right? Had you on here for a while now. Anything else you wanted to talk about, Tony? I mean, I could sit and talk to you all day.
As far as the stuff that I was wanting to go into is more about like that, like what we had talked about before, Matt, with the MK Ultra stuff and the ties to Kaczynski. And I know you were more interested in the current stuff.
Well, I mean, what's some of your favorite stuff to get into is kind of what I wanted to ask. Like,
yeah,
you've been doing this for a while. Like, what's your favorite stuff to reach, to look into? What's the, you know, the most bizarre thing that you think is real? Stuff like that.
Oh boy, I don't know, man. I really enjoyed my interview with Birkenfeld, you know, and just I thought that was a really good one.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Bannon, Porn and Meth House. I don't know if you heard that one. That was that's been talked about. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Morning Joe talks about it all the time, man, but never mentions me. You know? Oh, and you want to know what too, man? There's someone named Scarborough, Ryan Scarborough, that follows me on YouTube too. I got a feeling he's related to Joe there.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, you know that what I do wonder about too is, you know, what with all these accidental tweets or likes that you see on a reoccurring basis from, you know, popular, you know, well, celebrities and stuff, it makes me kind of wonder about how many times you interact with an alt account from one of these people and you don't really even know it.
Oh yeah, that's so true. Yeah, that's so true. Yeah. I'll give you an example. I needed to contact Tom Arnold. And he says, you're not going to believe this. He goes, I'm a fan. I was just listening to your show a minute ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because he had the woman, I was doing those shows about the women, Is Trump a Sex Pest, the BBC documentary, where I had that woman, Barbara Pilling, on, who we was sitting on her when she was like 16, 17 years old. Mm-hmm. And so he had the woman who produced that documentary. She was staying at his house and they were listening to my show at the same moment that I was emailing him. So, yeah. And that kind of stuff happens a lot. Yes, so I'm sure they have these alt accounts.
You could probably look at Ted Cruz's alt account. It's probably all Corey Chase likes.
Yeah.
let's see. I mean, so all right. So you think that's interesting? Because I was kind of thinking that the laptop story was kind of a nothing burger, right? Because it's like, if that's they have and that's what they release, it does seem that there's dirt there. But I think it's probably, like you were saying, it's probably negotiated, right, to not not come out with that.
I mean, it had to have been something more than what we saw. If like you said, Ed, they're trying to get $2 million out from it,
right?
You know,
just like there had to be more in Podesta's emails, okay? Mm-hmm. We see the conversations back and forth. They're all talking about this is going to be groundbreaking stuff about the Clintons. Mm-hmm. Well, how come we never saw it? What was it? And if you read through the Roger Stone indictment and you read through the Mueller report, they always talk about how the DNC became aware they were being hacked. And then they contacted CrowdStrike, not the other way around. So what did they see? Did they see a cable going from a computer that then they followed it over to Russia and they started like in all the Bugs Bunny cartoons? No, they got a phone call. They got a phone call from Putin. Mm-hmm. Oh, Ms. Clinton, look what I got on you. I got some serious dirt on you, Clintons. Okay. And if you don't get in line, I'm going to fuck with you.
Right.
Okay. And that, I deal with this before. And by the way, too, I can tell you something too. This stuff, these blackmail deals, this stuff gets covered up. And even old articles get removed, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, if there's a big settlement with a big company, say, like Disney or something like that, right? A big scandal, and they pay off the settlement, the lawyers go back and remove the stories from Vanity Fair and these kind of things. And this stuff gets scrubbed. Yeah. Gets scrubbed off the internet, man.
That's the real Mandela effect.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah. That's,
yeah.
That's real. Makes a lot more sense, yeah.
Yeah, it does. You have that kind of power to go ahead and scrub. I mean, the one that really shook me, it was more of the obvious one, was how you said the Hunter Biden story got completely scrubbed off of Twitter, off of Facebook. And in many ways, that made it a bigger story than I think it otherwise would have been. But like I try to make this case to Matt that I keep feeling the overall goal is to, once again, create an infrastructure where it's much like the earlier days of media, where you have just a few authoritative sources when it comes to information.
Yeah, it's a nice dystopia we got there, right? Like,
yeah. But I mean, yeah, Matt, you keep saying that it's impossible to go ahead and shut up all corners of the internet.
I mean, that's what I mean. Part of me thinks that they're not as good at it anymore. Plus, it's like a new – they're not as good at controlling the narrative that, like a lot of our, you know, institutions, they've kind of atrophied a bit, right? They're not as top tier as they once were, right? They're not as productive as talented, right? Like if you're, you know, talented at that kind of work, why would you go work for the government when you can get, you know, some Silicon Valley job making, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the thing is, a lot of these Silicon Valley jobs, these guys are government people, like Elon Musk, you know, is comes right out of this whole black deep state shit, you know. Uh-huh. He comes out of all the people that ran and started his company were out of the credit bureaus, the three credit reporting bureaus.
Wow.
Total C. Oh yeah, man. Yeah, you know.
I mean, I guess we shouldn't be all that surprised on that.
Yeah.
Well, I thought that SpaceX has done good work in terms of like kind of sort of breaking up that, you know, monopolies they had in the military industrial complex. That's why I always kind of gave him the benefit of the doubt, right? Before SpaceX came along, Lockheed and Boeing were doing every single NASA contract, any kind of launch contract, just charging astronomical amount of money and giving shoddy work. And now SpaceX comes up and does the same thing for, 20% of the price. So I always thought that, okay, well, he actually, you know, he's interested in doing good work here. He's not just interested in collecting, you know, that taxpayer money. I don't know what he would be.
Yeah, but you know, 20% cut of, you know, of a bank job is still, you know, still a good cut. You know?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
definitely charge a lot more.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah.
Damn. What was I gonna say? Just keep looking at this Birkenfeld thing. I don't know. What do you suggest? Like, what do we do? We got the cards stacked against us here. Any ideas?
That's a good question. I've always said, you know, we have to resist. We can't stop resisting.
Uh-huh.
With everything in our body. And I look back sometimes and says, you know what? I spent my whole life resisting. And where's it really gotten me? But then would things have been worse if I wasn't, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard to say. I'll leave you with this. This is a good way to leave you. Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't know if you know the whole story with my Sarah Palin case.
Yeah. Okay. I saw you mentioned it a few times. I haven't heard the whole story though.
I'll tell you real quick. And I've told a story on the air, just narrating it myself, called One Man Can Make a Difference.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I was contacted by the same people with the Tiger Woods case and the Charlie Sheen case, all those wacky cases. Mm-hmm. Came to me about this young woman, Shaley Tripp, who was a massage therapist in Alaska, who was having, you know, one of her clients was Todd Palin. And Todd Palin would send people over there and she would, you know, have sex with them and write down the activity, what they did, and report it back to Todd Palin. Obviously some kind of blackmail operation.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now they come to me and I says, Ed, you know, we have to recover some deleted emails. We have to come up with some proof of this. And, you know, I went in there and we couldn't quite get what they wanted. So the mm-hmm. agent dropped it. And so I'm the only one she had left to help her. And it was scary, but I says, okay, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to do this. I'm going to take on this case. I'm going to help this woman. Long story short, she was going to pay $50,000 with the National Enquirer. They tried to take the money back and stiff her mm-hmm. because the police chief of Anchorage came out with a press release saying, we examined the computers, we examined the hard drives, we examined the phones. There's no evidence of any relationship with Todd Palin. Comes out later on, we find out they didn't examine a damn thing. Sarah Palin's lawyers wrote that press release and gave it to the police chief.
Wow.
Yeah. So long story, this went on for like a year and a half. People broke into my house. All kinds of stuff went on. And ultimately, the day they said they lost her computer, they lost her stuff in the when she was – because she was arrested. Okay, she was arrested, this young girl, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And charged with prostitution. In fact, they had a whole FBI DEA raid there with machine guns and stuff like that on a Craigslist sex workers.
Wow.
Case. Now, the day I get her equipment back from the sheriff's department, Sarah Palin goes on TV and announces she's not going to run for president because there's all these people out there claiming they're having affairs with my husband. Okay. Now, she didn't mention our names, but obviously it was the same freaking day. By the way, too, stuff I would get in the mail was being broken into and stuff like that, cut open. You know, we were surrounded by spooks at that point, man, okay?
Mm.
But one person can make a difference. You just decide to stick your neck out, okay, and take this little case with your little girl, you know, and you could take down the President of the United States, a potential President of the United States. Mm-hmm. You know, and you can do this stuff too, like we did with, you know, lifting these people up, and now they're working for Nina Turner. This stuff can be done, you know, and I guess, you know, it's worth it. It's worth it to at least give it a try. Yep. So we don't all just roll over and watch the Kardashians. We're all fucked.
That's a good way to say it.
Yeah, it's good advice. I mean, the more desperate things get, the more willing people will be willing to take those risks, right? Like we were saying all along, like, oh, there's not going to be, you know, these Proud Boys aren't going to try to do anything, because why would they, right? Like they can just go back to watching Netflix. It's too comfortable, right? And I think that gets more and more unlikely the longer this kind of thing goes on, the tighter they kind of squeeze, right? Well, I guess that's a positive note, right? I guess we can take that as a positive.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So you're still working on that. Anything else you want to plug?
Working on the Patreon, Opera Report Patreon, working on that. I'm just talking right now to that girl, Kristen Spielman. We're going to reschedule. She sent me a message here.
Yeah. What are those guys up to?
I wish I could tell you. Okay, I know about them. What's mm-hmm. going on with those nuts? Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure. Like we agreed that when I do this interview, she's not going to say anything new. Mm-hmm. But you know, they just got arrested for doing those robocalls over there in Michigan. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's a ton of stuff they haven't been charged with.
Stop the steal.
There we go.
All right, guys.
All right. Well, thank you very much for coming on with us. Anybody watching us during the day that doesn't usually watch us at night, go ahead and hit that follow button. And we'll see if we come on tonight then.
Yeah, and listen to Ed's show.
Yep. Make sure you watch it over on
the best place to catch my archives over at Spreaker. Spreaker.com. SPREAKER.com.
Yep.
And, all right, guys. Thank you. It's like that!